2007, full committee, excuse me, April 20th, 2007, to order here. Got a number of bills. Hopefully get through them in a timely manner. Let's start with House Bill 2201-A, Engrossed Healthy Kids Program, Human Services Subcommittee. Senator Carter, please.
Good morning, colleagues. House Bill 2201 creates the Healthy Kids Program and increases tobacco tax revenue to provide health insurance coverage for many of the state's estimated 117,000 uninsured children. This measure would raise the Children's Health Insurance Program eligibility income limit from 185% of the federal poverty level where it is today to 200% of the federal poverty level. Between 200% of the federal poverty level and 300% of the federal poverty level, the plan would provide subsidies based on a sliding scale to families so they could purchase a Healthy Kids Plan commercial health insurance product for their children. Households with incomes above 300% would be allowed to purchase this product, but without any subsidy. In addition to the Healthy Kids Plan, this measure makes several other strategic investments. In 07-09, the measure would provide an additional $8.6 million to the Tobacco Use Reduction Account, better known as TORA, to expand our state's tobacco prevention education programs. It would add $2.4 million to enhance our rural community's health care infrastructure. And it would strengthen Oregon safety net clinics by allocating $6.2 million to a newly created Healthy Kids Safety Net Fund. Under the co-chair's budget, the Healthy Kids Program Fund would retain an 07-09 ending balance of nearly $98 million that can be used to sustain this program, despite modest declines in future tobacco tax revenue or increasing program costs from what we hope will be higher caseloads. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2201A be reported out, do pass as amended.
Discussion. Senator Vice Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. I'll be a no vote on this, and I think this program is too important for Oregon, and especially too important for the children and the families of Oregon to be pushed out of the process in this way. I don't think that there was nearly enough time taken to take a look at the ramifications of this. I have great concerns over the sustainability of the funding source. There was very little data introduced into the committee to show what the impacts of revenue and costs were out beyond the next biennium. And I think that when you have a policy area like this one, where the inflation rates have been in the double digits, and you have a revenue source where there's going to be a very substantial increase in the effort to get people to quit smoking, that it bears looking at over the long term whether this is indeed sustainable. And I have, based on that and based on other issues around the ability of the healthcare provider arena to be able to actually provide service to the number of children that it's anticipated being added to the delivery system, I think that there is a huge need to slow this thing down, take a better look at the funding source, take a better look at the implementation of it, and make sure that this very important program is implemented in a way that it truly will benefit the children of the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will, too, be voting no on this particular budget, and for partially some of the same reasons as Representative Morgan has articulated, but mainly because I have opposed throughout my history in the legislature the particular source of revenue, taxing the particular source that this bill proposes to tax. But even more important than my previous stand and positions on that is the fact that one of my criteria for being supportive of this bill, for even beginning to be supportive of this bill, was that the bill would include prenatal care. And I've made that particular position well known as the process was working its way, the bill was working its way through the system. And, you know, I think just strictly from both the humanitarian side, if that is not an inappropriate word to use with this, that the prenatal care piece would be far more important than, say, the 16 to 18 year old or some category in that neighborhood. But also, if I can put the conservative, fiscal conservative cap on for a moment, we would just get a lot more bang for our buck by providing for prenatal care than we will providing for care on down the line someplace, because it's there. And I obviously can get trumped by this by far more expertise in this field than I have, but, you know, by some of the members of the Senate caucus, but members of the Senate on the body. But it is for that reason that I find it just impossible for me to be supportive of this particular bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do not advocate smoking, but I do advocate for smokers. 20% of this state's population are smokers, and this is a taxation on a minority. The Smokers Caucus met just moments before we came in here. It's one person. And we voted to oppose the bill.
Reasonable, Representative. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yesterday I left a subcommittee meeting to go down and just spend a little bit of time in the Human Services Ways and Means sub to hear this bill as it came through that body. I've been involved in the leadership negotiations on this bill. I had good hope that we were going to make some progress on that. I was really surprised to watch it come through a subcommittee of the Ways and Means process with really one member asking questions. This is a bill that generates nearly $181 million in new taxes on Oregonians. This is a bill that has in many cases, among the group that Representative Garrard mentioned, in the low-income segment, subsidizing health insurance premiums for those in income brackets, many times twice their income level. And to spend 35 or 40 minutes in a subcommittee with this, bring it to full, and be sending it to the floor of the House with really one member asking questions about it and no further discussion. I just can't imagine that everybody on the committee knows in all the details and has it all figured out that this thing is sustainable over the long run, that they understand the ramifications, that this is doing very little to expand access to care for parents. And for those of us who have watched health care, we know that the better access parents have, the more access children have. And I just don't think that we have given this thing the right chance to be put together. Furthermore, there are other ideas within the building that have not even been heard. And there again, if we could mesh some of those ideas together, we might better serve Oregon's children. I'll be a no vote on this.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I come at this from a little different perspective, and it comes from the perspective of having participated in six of the seven Ways and Means hearings that we held around the state. And if there was any message that was sent to us as a body, was that we are structurally budget gapped. We are not adequately funding major programs that we currently have on the table. We could argue the amount, but I would suggest that in education alone, we are budget gapped by at least $700 million. We're talking about funding OSP, and that's another $100+ million. We're talking about the developmentally disabled, the mental health. We're budget gapped in that arena probably to the tune of $120 million. And what we're doing today is we are adding a major new program with a funding source of which we want to decline. We want it to diminish. So what that means is that we are passing a program today that we will eventually down the road transfer the funding to the general fund, our discretionary funds, as those tobacco dollars decrease. In the same time, when we listened yesterday to the most eloquent presentation that I've heard from President Frohnmayer about the disinvestment that we have made in higher education in this state. So what we're doing is we are impairing our ability in the future to address those critical programs that are presently on the table today that we're not funding. This is a major, major new program, is the source of funding sustainable into the future, and what impact will that have on the existing programs that we are not funding adequately? This is a socially responsible bill, without question. Finding ways to provide health care for our most needy children is, without question, responsible. But our duty today is to ask the question, is this body, not the policy issue, it's the fiscal issue. Is this fiscally responsible today in the environment that we have where we are so substantially budget gapped in major programs that are on the table? So, Mr. Co-Chair, as much as I believe in providing services to our most needy, I just can't see that this bill is appropriate given the circumstances in which we find ourselves today. And I appreciate the opportunity to make comments, and I will be a no vote.
Thank you, sir. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I too have some serious concerns, and while everyone in this room know how I support health care, not only for children, but also I've been the one that has voiced that we need to include access for parents, because when we don't have the parents, we don't get the kids. In addition to that, I'm troubled that we've had a bipartisan group of legislators who have been meeting, trying to address some of the questions and issues that have been raised here today, and for a lot of reasons, that hasn't gone forward. I think of any message that has been sent to us from the public has been that they expect us to work together to solve problems. And as I see what has occurred, we have abandoned that process. And I'm troubled by that. I'm troubled that we're abandoning the ability that we have been sent here to do, to work together to solve an issue. I'm also concerned that we're putting in place a program that raises about $100 million, but that less than half of that is actually going to take care of children. And that's troubling for me, because I'd like to know where the rest of the half is going. And the other thing that's troubling to me is how we're going to sustain the program. You know, we heard on the floor the other day there was a joint memorial that talked about No Child Left Behind, and the fact that we all have to respond to the mandates of the federal government. Well, here we're putting in a mandate in place without knowing how we're going to fund it later in time. And so those are some of my concerns that I have, and I want to go on record that I do support healthy kids, and I support expanding it to where we're talking about healthy families. Because certainly, if we are not addressing the issue of healthy families, we're not going to have healthy kids, and for that reason, I would be a no vote.
Thank you. Senator Whitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, the only way that I can see that this program can be sustained is to teach our kids to light up. Otherwise, the funding source will certainly dry up, creating yet another underfunded or unfunded program. So I will be no also.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of points to be made here. First off, there is plenty of capacity in this state for taking care of these kids. Every kid in Oregon is being taken care of right now, but they're being taken care of in the wrong place, the wrong time. Last evening I was in Pendleton and I was in LeGrand talking to healthcare providers there and hospital people. They're tired of seeing kids in their ERs with earaches, sore throats, getting taken care of late in their diseases, expensive times, a bill for $400 or $500 for a sore throat when it shouldn't be taken care of in a primary care setting somewhere in the community. This bill allows that to happen. The capacity is there. It has to be accessed properly. Secondly, there is no health care system in the United States right now that's sustainable, not a single one. No commercial program, no federal program, no state program at the present time sustainable. Health care costs are double digit every year and going up and going up and going up. The key driver for that is the lack of primary and preventative care. The most important part of this bill is really not what we're raising money for kids, or for reinvigorating OHP, or for putting money into rural health programs. It's getting people to quit smoking cigarettes. The most important preventative thing, the single most preventative thing we can do to save money in the entire healthcare system is getting people to quit smoking cigarettes, and it's that simple. It is the leading cause of death in the United States. It's the leading cause of disability, and it's the leading cause of what causes us to spend so much money on health care issues. People in this panel know it. You're not addressing it. Admittedly, for this particular program, it's not going to be sustainable. But nothing is. If you took the entire program, the entire Medicaid program, and looked at the savings from this decrease in smoking, knowing that people inside the Medicaid program smoke at a higher rate than any other group in the state, almost 40%, if you look at the decrease in smoking in that population, there's going to be huge savings for the entire program. Meaning that OHP can sustain itself. If programs that are being brought forth, the Senate Bill 329 or that can be Archimedes program or some of the ones we're going to see in this session, aren't brought forward and enacted in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see people dropping off OHP. The 615,000 people we have uninsured right now will balloon up and the system's going to collapse. This is the first good step forward. It will reduce smoking, it will insure kids, it will open up OHP enrollment again. It's a step in the right direction. And all the stories I've heard here today, frankly, for me, don't hold water. Think over your votes, please. Think over your votes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Gridley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our job is to balance the budget, and at the end of the day, we'll have accomplished our job, which is to balance the budget. Speaking to the issue of sustainability, another part of our job, along with balancing the budget, and that's a constitutional requirement, another part of our job, which is also a constitutional requirement, outlined in Chapter 9 of the Constitution, which is a chapter on finance, in Sections 2 and 6. It says, in essence, that when there are insufficient funds to operate government services, the legislature shall levy a tax. We're not doing our job. And we haven't been doing our job. We continue to run from that particular requirement and responsibility, which is very clearly spelled out in the Constitution. And we all swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. We need to, and this is speaking to the comments offered by the good Senator Morse, and I support and agree with much of what he said. Our opportunity in this session is to act on revenue reform. Everything, all the decisions, all the choices we're going to make around budgets in this session, they're all going to be unsustainable, whether it's education, whether it's the measure before us, the Healthy Kids Program, whether it's public safety.
our opportunity is to act on revenue reform in this session. There's a bill in Representative Barnhart's committee. I haven't heard when hearings are going to be scheduled on that bill. We better get with it. This state is at the bottom in so many categories. We're number 50 in so many categories, whether you talk about judicial salaries, long-term care ombudsman, we heard that program yesterday. When are we going to summon the courage, colleagues, to deal with the elephant in the room? The elephant in the room is revenue reform. Now, with regard to the measure in front of us, every Oregon child deserves health care and deserves health care now. Our kids shouldn't have to wait another day while we grapple over politics and details that can be ironed out while this policy is being implemented. We have children who need health care now. We're talking about the well-being of the most vulnerable population in our state, along with seniors. You know, with that said, I'm going to vote for this measure because it's, in my mind, it's the right thing to do. It's the principled thing to do. This is about our kids. They don't have a vote. And then the other admonishment that I make to all of us is around revenue reform, Mr. Chair and co-chairs. Let's make sure that the revenue reform bill gets scheduled. Let's have those hearings. Let's invite the Oregon public in to have that conversation around revenue reform. This state is going down the tubes. And we are not doing our very best to prevent that from happening.
Well said, Senator. Representative Lizio.
I wanted to point out to Senator Gordley that we are in the top five in spending for corrections. But so this, number one, I would just point out in terms of financial sustainability, the status quo is what is unsustainable, as Senator Bates pointed out. So if we want to keep having kids going to the emergency room and those kinds of costs, that's what's unsustainable. Secondly, I think if you look at the Department of Revenue's analysis of the cigarette tax, you'll see that indeed it does pay for the program for some time. And granted, to project out far into the future is difficult, but it does pencil out to a degree. Also, there's empirical proof from Washington State in terms of the tax, so we have kind of a model about some of the behavior. But I would just, I think if you look at what happened in the Revenue Committee and the analysis there, it shows that it is sustainable. In terms of the time to vet the bill, there have been many hearings, a lot of analysis. This didn't just all of a sudden arise, so I just don't see where that argument holds any water whatsoever. And to my good friend, Representative Garrard, I would say the 80% of the non-smokers are sort of subsidizing the habit of the 20% of those who do. So I still consider you my friend, but those of us who don't smoke are subsidizing the health care of those who do. Yes, there are other ideas in this building vis-a-vis health care, and let's look at them. But on the whole, the status quo is what's failing us. This is an opportunity to cover kids, and I think we should vote aye on this.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, I think in this building there is always a reason to wait, particularly if you oppose a bill. And this morning, I think it's clear to me that it's time to act. Right now, it's time to vote. We've held numerous hearings on this bill. We've been in negotiations with the minority party since the beginning of the session. And I say it's time to solve the problem of uninsured kids beginning today. So let's get it done.
Thank you, Representative. Good comment. Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. Just to put some details on some of the comments that have just recently been made, I find it hard to accept any notion that this bill has snuck up on anybody. It has been very loudly and publicly discussed since we first adjourned in January. Indeed, it didn't come to the Ways and Means Committee initially. It went to the House Health Care Committee, the Policy Committee, that held numerous public hearings, and those were published, and anyone at all who was interested in the substance of the bill was certainly available and welcome to participate in those conversations. And from that committee, which passed the bill out, it went to the House Revenue Committee, which also held hearings, invited the Senate Revenue Committee to sit together with them to consider the financing that's proposed for this service that is, I haven't heard anyone object to the service. We agree that the service is necessary, and so we asked our colleagues who are responsible for revenue to look at how we pay for it. If there are other specific ways to cover this service, the co-chair and I would welcome those proposals, but I haven't heard any specific alternative ways other than the ones in this bill for this service. And finally, the bill came from revenue with some amendments to address some concerns about sustainability to the Ways and Means Committee. And our good subcommittee chair on human services also held a public hearing on this bill before the work session. So this is one of the bills that's probably been worked and heard and considered more than any other bill this session. I think it is time to vote.
Brief comment, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do want to follow up on Co-Chair Nolan's comments about alternatives. We do have House Bill 2530, where we heard Thursday morning of next week, or afternoon at 1 o'clock. That bill does represent an alternative. And it's an alternative that is equitable. It's an alternative that provides a tax relief. It's an alternative that provides revenues to address the budget gap that we find ourselves in. And it's a bit of policy that we have not wanted to address because it's a difficult one to talk about, but it does provide alternatives. And if we were to apply the same tax burden across all of Oregon's taxpayers, it's the equivalent of a $900 million tax increase. We should be talking about different alternatives, and I think we do have that opportunity that will be coming up next week, and I look forward to having that discussion, and I hope it permeates this entire building.
Absolutely.
In a way that we will look at systemic solutions and not incremental fixes. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Very good. For the discussion, last comment from Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I try always to keep an open mind, and I even listen on occasion in committee to what people have to say, and I think as Senator Johnson has witnessed, I've even changed my mind in committee.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard on my religion when I do that, but in spite of the very persuasive arguments by my good friends and colleagues for this bill, I do note we haven't addressed yet my major concern. I do understand the six-year-old who needs health care, and a family can't provide the health care. But when the reason that six-year-old needs the health care was because we failed to provide the prenatal care, I'm hard-pressed to understand the passion with which some of you want to support the bill as it currently exists. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that may be a little out of the it seemed to me the norm in Ways and Means is to kind of have one shot at your thing and not make two. And I apologize to the co-chairs.
No problem, sir.
And to the members of the committee for that.
No problem, sir. Well, let's go to the vote. I think we should do a roll call vote on this.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Hanna?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Guard?
No.
Representative Galizio?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Nolan?
Yes.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
No.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Carter?
Aye.
Co-Chair Schrader?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. Thank you all.
Question privilege.
Yes, please. Senator Carter.
This bill reflects an opportunity for some and a missed opportunity for others. I have no argument against any one person expressing their individual right to say no or to say yes. But I do say that when we talk about the issue of sustainability, it is frivolous at best, because prisons will never be sustainable. And many of the programs that we do in economic development will never be sustainable. And certainly not health care will be sustainable, and all of us know that. Working together has been a privilege of mine across the aisle since I came here in 1985, and I take pride in that. But it's also a misnomer for anyone to sit here and say that we have not tried to work together on issues that would bring us together. It's just that all of us are going to express our individual rights to our likes or our dislike or something, and I recognize the fact that it is the opposition's position always to try to not have something become a reality if they didn't sponsor it. So I'm not against people saying no, but some of the missed opportunities in statements and conversation today was very frivolous in my own eyes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. All right, let's go to Senate Bill 5547, the Department of Human Services 2005-07 Rebalance. Again, our Human Services Subcommittee. Senator Carter.
Thank you. Senate Bill 5547, as amended, implements the Department of Human Services Rebalance Plan for the 2005-2007 biennium. Rebalance plans allow DHS to shift general funds and other funds and federal funds expenditure limitation as budget needs change over the course of the biennium because caseload changes, cost shifts, revenue issues, or management actions. The bill as amended adds $9,415,607 general fund and $7,364,193 other funds to keep DHS's budget in balance for the 05-07 biennium. This includes $300,000 general fund added by the Human Services Subcommittee for Family Planning Services. The bill also disappropriates $9,861,271 remaining in the $83.3 million special purpose appropriation made during the April 2006 special session for DHS caseloads, cost per case, and program needs. The most significant general fund adjustments in the rebalance plan reflect, number one, an overall $36.3 million general fund savings from caseloads and cost per case in self-sufficiency and child welfare programs. The Oregon Health Plan and home care for seniors and people with disabilities, which are lower than previously forecast. Number two, $24 million general fund needed to meet federal temporary assistance to needy families, maintenance of effort requirements for federal fiscal year 2007. Due to uncertainty around the MOE issue and its potential impact on the 07-09 budget, the subcommittee approved a budget note directing DHS to report on the status of the MOE requirement and available TANF funds after it closes out its 2005-2007 budget. $9.2 million, number three, general fund to cover higher costs for staff, pharmaceuticals, and contracted medical professionals at Oregon State Hospital and Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. Number four, general fund added to backfill a net $7.7 million shortfall in other and federal funds revenues, including adjustments in the department's federal cost allocation plan. Number five, $3.9 million general fund and increased costs related to the state data center. And finally, $2 million general fund to offset budget savings expected from House Bill 3108's reduction of certain OHP benefits, which DHS did not reduce by direction of legislative leadership. The subcommittee received information of DHS's actions to improve its financial operations and fiscal accountability, including periodic caseload forecast review meetings with legislators. The subcommittee directed DHS to reinstate those meetings during the 07-09 interim. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5547 be amended and reported out, do pass as amended. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good, thank you. Comments? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. May I ask the carrier question, please?
You may.
Thank you. I'm wondering on the $300,000 in family planning, during the discussions in committee, was there a detail of what that additional funding was for?
No, we just talked about it going to the family planning piece for public health.
Could I clarify that maybe with
question
the session staff, please?
John?
Representative Hanna, could you ask that question again, please?
The $300,000 addition to the family planning, apparently there was no discussion in committee of the details of that additional funding. Could you explain that, please?
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Hanna, that is additional money for the Family Planning Expansion Program. And this is a jointly general fund and federally funded program where money is allocated to local health departments and to family planning clinics to provide primarily contraception to low-income women, primarily.
Can I follow up on that then?
Yes, sir.
Is that abortion funding?
Senator Schrader and Representative Hanna, no, it is not.
Senator Winters.
A point of clarification. I asked the question during the subcommittee hearing, and if I recall correctly, the response that I received back from Mr. Goldberg was that the dollars are used to verify eligibility because they were having a difficult time with the federal act was in place of that required that everybody who now applies for services must be certified as a resident and a citizen. And so these funds are for that purpose because the difficulty has been not with the non-U.S. citizens, but actually with our own citizens in having valid birth certificates and that. And as I understood it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Britton, but that was the purpose of the $300,000.
Very good. Thank you guys for the clarification. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 1041 relating to health services. Again, Human Services Subcommittee, but this time Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1041 repeals Section 9 of House Bill 3108 from the 2005 legislative session. This section of 3108 allowed the Department of Human Services to implement several reductions to the Oregon Health Plan benefits package, including the elimination of over-the-counter medications for below-the-line treatments, limiting reimbursement to hospitals to a maximum of 18 days per year for an OHP client, eliminating vision services, and reducing some dental coverage. Section 9 required DHS to seek approval for these reductions from CMS. Although CMS approved these reductions last September, legislative leadership advised DHS not
to implement them, because these reductions were assumed in the 05-07 budget but not made. The DHS budget is estimated to be about $1,988,251 of general fund short. The latest 05-07 DHS rebalance plan funded this in 55-47 and contains a general fund appropriation to cover this shortfall. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1041 be reported out, due pass.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was a no on this bill in the subcommittee, and I'll be a no on it in the full committee. I think that it is not fiscally, there are real questions about continuing a program to the end of the biennium, and without having had the discussion about whether these programs are going to be funded in the period that we're budgeting for. So I think that we're doing this backwards, and I'll be a no vote.
Thank you, Representative. For the discussion, Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Schrader. Question to the Carrier, please.
Commissioner the Carrier.
Thank you, Senator Wesley. Senator, we understand that the vote of the 05-07 Legislative Assembly was countermanded by legislative leadership without a vote of the Assembly?
What I think it's more accurate to reflect is that when House Bill 3108 passed in late, would have been August of 05, the application was then made to the Centers for Medicaid, Medicare Services. That is, as we all know, a somewhat lengthy time, and by the time that approval came through, it was actually into this calendar year. So as opposed to then having to give the proper noticing, which I believe is 90 days, I could be wrong on that, to rescind the benefits for a policy that may be reinstated in the 07-09 biennium. It was elected not to make those recensions and rebalance and then discuss the policy issue for the 07-09 budget.
Yes, sir, go right ahead.
I take it that was a yes.
Excuse me?
I take it the answer was yes.
Not really.
It was a not really.
I mean, there's a time logistics where you just physically can't do. Just because you push a legislative button doesn't mean you automatically get permission from the feds. And by the time that permission came through, it was impractical to implement.
And Mr. Chair, both leadership, both the House and Senate leadership made that decision. Rather than cut people off for a short period of time, it just may as well extend it to this, the year when it was going to be picked up again.
Thank you. Good comment.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was a procedural question. Was the timing such that this issue could not have come before the emergency board?
I don't recall that piece, Senator. I think it was just a leadership decision that was made because of the lateness of the application process being made in terms of the waiver itself and the time between when I think it was about...
I think it came in late December.
Yeah, I don't think the emergency board was setting at that juncture.
Okay, thank you.
And this does raise the policy questions.
Yes, that's what I'm raising.
For these specific benefits, I thought we all did, the right thing, or pretty much the right thing in 3108 was, curtail some benefits as opposed to reducing people. That's what this comes down to. Are you going to reduce the number of people covered, or are you going to reduce the number of benefits? And I think this is a policy question we are going to want for this body to deliberate. Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, I think also it is a policy question, but I think it's a legislative leadership prerogative, both the House and the Senate, in making this decision. I don't mean to sound flamboyant, because I think that's going to happen.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Sorry, Representative Garrard.
Just to clarify the point of timing, it is my understanding in the conversations I've had with the department that they kept legislative leadership throughout the interim on both sides of the building informed of the status of their application and the communications that they were having with the feds. And so that includes the legislative leadership on the House side that is the previous leadership as well. So they were advised of the status and concurred with what the, in fact, directed the department to do what it was doing to try to expedite the process, but not implement it until they had the waiver.
Representative Gerhardt, thank you for your patience. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I will be voting as the good senator from Tumalo. I'll be voting not really.
That was cogent and brief. I appreciate the comment.
I wish that was enough.
Bates, please go ahead.
Thank you. Which I don't want to take a lot of time up here, but as far as being informed, I was not leadership. I was not an E-board, and yet I was completely informed about this as a member of the legislature as it went along. This was no big surprise. We were waiting for the waiver to come through, Didn't come through in my memory until December, January. By that time, we're coming back into session, and to turn these programs off, you got to send about 50,000 letters out. You got to talk to a lot of different providers, a lot of different healthcare systems, and say, stop what you're doing as far as it's concerned. Stop some care that's ongoing for some patients right in the middle of their care. And then maybe in 90 days, turn it back on again. The cost of doing that is not insignificant. The confusion is massive. And you're not going to gain anything. This was put in place at a time when we were in a real budget crunch, and we're not going to be able to maintain programs unless we made some cuts in those programs. Caseload went down, economy improved. The real need for this that was there at that time was no longer there in December and January. It is a discussion this group, this committee, and subcommittees need to have about what benefits we're going to offer in the future, you know, in health plan. But to turn it on and turn it off in a 90-day period of time is just insane. I think the leadership on both sides, including the previous Republican leadership, made a good decision, decided not to do it. And that's the result. The result is this legislation in front of us. So I think it's a process that worked well. And I commend both Republicans and Democrats in this, leadership both the House and the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Mr. Mayor, I'd like to sell some of my colleagues some oceanfront property in Utah. If there's an opportunity after the session. With that, is there any objections to this vote? Let's see, we've got Representative Gerhardt, Representative Hanna, and Representative Morgan, Senator Whitsitt. Thank you very much. Passes. Let's go to Senate Bill 5521, Bureau of Labor and Industries. Representative Shields, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5521 is the budget bill for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Bureau ensures compliance with state laws relating to apprenticeship, wage and hours worked, terms and conditions of employment, and the rights of workers and citizens to equal and non-discriminatory treatment. The Bureau is primarily funded with the general fund. The department receives other funds from assessments on public works contracts, technical assistance fees, and contracts with other government entities. Federal funds are received for civil rights enforcement activities. The Bureau also manages the Wage Security Fund and is used to pay final wages for employees whose employers cease operations and default on final paychecks. The Wage Security Fund comes from a diversion of 0.3% of unemployment insurance taxes in the last quarter of each odd-numbered year. The subcommittee approved a total budget of $22,879,743, including $12.6 million general fund, $6.4 million other funds, $1.5 million federal funds, $2.3 million in the non-limited wage security fund, and 111 FTE. This includes four policy packages that partially restore civil rights and wage claim enforcement, make a limited duration prevailing wage position permanent, and implement a program to integrate apprenticeship programs with high school workforce development initiatives. There is a reduction of $20,000 general fund to partially offset the cost of the policy packages. The subcommittee approved three budget notes. The Bureau is directed to monitor and report on its wage claim activities and to report on the implementation of the apprenticeship integration program. The Bureau is also directed to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office to revise its key performance measures and report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on these measures. The subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 5521 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you very much, Representative. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Question for Representative Shields. What discussion did the committee have about housing the advocacy commissions within the Bureau of Labor?
That's Senator Gordley, that's a good question. I'd like to have the staff come up and refresh my memory. There have been discussions in the building around that particular issue, and but I can't remember the specific discussions in the committee.
Co-Chair Schrader, Senator Gordley, there were no discussions in the deliberations on the budget bill. I believe that that issue is included in a substantive bill or will be included in some subsequent discussions, but it was not in front of the committee.
Okay. That's helpful. What's behind my question is also wanting to know whether there are or will be any budget implications for the Bureau of Labor and Industries should the advocacy commissions be moved and be housed within that agency.
Senator Gordon, my understanding is that it's primarily just a moval, physical move, and that there wouldn't necessarily be staffing implications or other than simply the commissions just being housed in the Bowie department. That's my impression, at least.
We can discuss that more when the advocacy commission's budget comes up and the bill in particular. Yeah. That's a good comment, though. We'll make sure that gets discussed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who else had a comment? Senator Berger? Yes, please.
Well, I think that there was some discussion in that they have the civil rights issue before them, Senator Gordon. And so I think that following through that part of the discussion as to moving them was what made sense to the committee. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Further discussion? Objections? We've got Representative Garrard, Hannah, and Morgan. Anyone else? Senator Whitsitt, of course. Seeing no others, passes. House Bill 5015, Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. Senator Morse, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 5015 is the budget bill for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. The Board oversees a voluntary licensing program for individuals who want to use the title of Licensed Professional Counselor or Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist. The agency is funded by revenue generated from application and license fees. The Education Subcommittee approved an other funds budget of $637,338 and 2.5 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget increases a part-time position to full-time and provides a small increase to more closely align the in-state travel budget with actual spending. The subcommittee also approved the current biennium other funds expenditure limitation of $100,000. The increase is needed to cover the increasing costs associated with disciplinary actions and the extraordinary use of temporary staff. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5015 be amended and reported out. Do pass as amended.
Thank you very much, Senator. Questions? Discussion? Objections? Seeing none? So ordered. Let's go to 5027, Health Licensing Agency. Representative Galizio, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5027 is the budget bill for the Health Licensing Agency. The agency provides centralized regulatory oversight for 15 diverse professions, including cosmetology, midwifery, that's how you pronounce it, body piercing, for the likes of Senator Westland, and athletic trainers. The agency is funded... Sorry?
For the likes of...
Yes. The agency is funded by revenue generated from application examination and license fees. The Education Subcommittee approved an other funds budget of $6 million and 31.4 FTE. The approved budget includes five limited duration positions to allow the agency to pilot annual inspections. Increasing the frequency of inspections is expected to reduce the number and severity of violations and ease complaint workload. The agency will report the results of the pilot during their 2009 budget presentation. The approved budget also adds one permanent position to address increasing workload, licensing workload, and provides for information technology initiatives to expand e-commerce services and improve database efficiency. The subcommittee approved the agency's key performance measures with revised targets. The education subcommittee recommends House Bill 5027 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Questions?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Just a comment. The health licensing agency and the health licensing boards have traditionally been assigned to and heard in the education subcommittee of Ways and Means. I've never understood that assignment. Because where the place where you can have the rigorous policy discussion about the health licensing agency and the boards, it makes sense to have that policy discussion in the policy committees and also to have the budget discussion related to the policy discussion in the human services subcommittee. So I would suggest, strongly recommend, that we relook the way in which the boards are assigned, and again, the assignment to education doesn't fit. And we have a missed opportunity to have to be fully engaged with these boards down in human services. Because again, we're talking about the Board of Nursing, we're talking about the Board of Medical Examiners, the professional counselors and psychiatrists, and all the other 14 or so boards. Just want all the powers that be leadership to look at this, and let's do it differently next session.
Thank you. Good comments. We'll look at that. I think it's a workload issue, but we'll certainly look at that for next session. Good comments. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 5028, Health Licensing Agency Fee Bill. Representative Galizio again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5028 ratifies fee changes approved by the 2005 legislature and implemented administratively by the Health Licensing Agency during the interim. The agency's 2007-09 budget assumes the continuation of the fee increases, which are expected to generate approximately $500,000. Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5028 be reported out. Do pass.
That was excellent. One of the best reads we've had today, actually.
Thank you.
Thanks,
mm-hmm.
Sir. Discussion. Objection. Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 5029. Senator Marks, please.
House Bill 5029 is the budget bill for eight health-related licensing boards. The boards regulate their respective professions through licensing and disciplinary programs and are funded by revenue generated from application, examination, and license fees. The Education Subcommittee approved in aggregate and other funds budget of $3.4 million and 16.12 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget is 1.3% less than the essential budget level. The budgets for the Mortuary and Cemetery Board and the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators were reduced in response to revenue shortfalls. These agencies may return during the interim with fee proposals to restore the reductions. The subcommittee also approved the current biennium other funds expenditure limitation of $17,000 for the Board of Examiners for speech, language, pathology, and audiology. The increase is needed to cover increased costs associated with disciplinary cases. Performance measures were reviewed and the new Board Best Practices measure was added. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5029 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, sir. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 5030, Health-Related Licensing Boards, again, the fee bill. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5030 ratifies fee changes approved by the 2005 legislature and implemented administratively by the Board of Examiners of Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology during the interim. The agency's 2007-09 budget assumes the continuation of fee increases, which are expected to generate approximately $126,000. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5030 be reported out due pass.
Good read. Very good read. Yes, Representative Hanna.
Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So the carrier, did you receive any comment from the individual members of these groups about the, you know, 33% and 60% fee increase?
Thank you for the question. I don't recall that we had testimony to that effect.
I just want to comment on this, and if you read at the bottom of the page of the summary, you know, they say the fee had not been increased from 1995, but when you hear from the constituents that are part of these boards, you know, the internal management of these organizations waiting so long to do this, and then you hear from the constituencies that scream because we have a 60% fee increase, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I'd just like to say I would hope we will manage these issues as we go along so you don't have the folks who have been going along paying their license. If they were seeing a 3 or 5% increase, they would understand that as additional cost to business. But when you come along and tag them with 33 and 60% increase, it just seems unreasonable, and they have a hard time accepting that. For that reason, on this particular bill, I'll be a no.
Thank you. Good comment. Hopefully the board people are listening. It's a very cogent comment. Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment on that because there have been increases that have come to the body in years past in the sessions that I've been here, and they've been voted down because people looked at them as a tax. And so that could be one of the reasons that we've not been able to raise some of the fees. And I just wanted to make that comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good comment. Further discussion? Susan, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Just one additional piece to add to this discussion is that I think in many of these boards and commissions, we have added best business practices, which would cause a process to occur where there are discussions of fee increases to at least be addressed at the board level, which I believe is the point of public contact into these boards and commissions. And so I hope as part of the new engagement of the boards that advise these groups that they would take that into consideration to make sure that the public is heard at all levels of the debate.
Very good. Further discussion? Seeing none, objections? Representative Hanna and Representative Morgan. Keep trying to elevate the representatives and let's see,
Let's don't debate.
Yes, sir. And Senator Woodson.
There.
Seeing none, it passes. No others, it passes. That was bad. House Bill 5041, Department of Revenue. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5041 is a budget bill for the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue is everybody's favorite department. Is responsible for the consistent application of the property tax assessments and the administration and enforcement of Oregon income and cigarettes and other tobacco tax laws. The General Government Subcommittee approved the total budget of $181 million. $148.5 million of that was general funds. $32.5 million was other funds. The total funds budget is 2.6% above the department's essential budget level. The subcommittee approved a few enhancements to the department's budget to help improve operating efficiencies and one to improve administration of refundable tax credits. Enhancements for operating efficiencies included funding to lease new check receipt and deposit processing equipment and for imaging of income tax returns. We approved four positions dedicated to reviewing and processing refundable tax credits and to work with those involved with the credits to improve accuracy and completeness of necessary documentation for the credits. We also approved continued other funds for the administration and enforcement activities related to cigarette and other tobacco taxes. The subcommittee also reviewed the agency's performance measures. We directed the department to revise the performance measure number 4 on customer contacts to provide a more outcome-oriented target. We approved the department's other performance measures included in the budget report. We discussed the potential for a performance measure related to closing the tax gap, but agreed that the objective analysis of the tax gap is needed first. We believe a task force or interim committee to be staffed by the Legislative Revenue Office could provide objective analysis and encourage the Assembly to consider that for the interim work. The General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5041 be amended and report it out, do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Comments? Discussion? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question of the carrier.
Question? Carrier?
I noticed that the subcommittee approved the first phase of an electronic document management system dealing with corporate tax returns. So I'm wondering if there's any discussion around changing performance measurement number 6, which combines the speed with which the agency closes both personal income tax and corporate tax cases. Assuming that the document, that the electronic documentation system works properly, I would assume that the corporate tax returns would be able to be processed faster than personal, and so it would make sense, I think, to split that performance measure into two, one for personal income tax returns and one for corporate.
Thank you for the question and the observation. The simple answer is that was not discussed in committee.
Okay. That's something we can bring forward. Good comment. Further discussion? Objections? The Representative Hanna, Representative Morgan. Don't want any revenue in our state. That's okay. No problem. Oh, and Representative Gard.
Let's talk about sustainability, shall we?
Any others? Seeing none? So ordered. Senate Bill 100, relating to Oregon State Fair Account, Natural Resources Sub, Representative Girard.
Senate Bill 100 is a housekeeping measure that places the Oregon State Fair Account within the Parks and Recreation Department fund. The measure is non-fiscal. Good bill should pass.
Hey, excellent. Read. And there's a question. Senator Bates.
Will the carrier yield to a question?
Carrier will yield.
Okay. I'm knowing I'm talking to the smoking caucus this morning. I'm going to be careful what I say here. And you may not know the answer, but this is a agency that was, the State Fair was an agency that was extremely troubled last session over bond issues and not even failing to make a bond issue payment at one point. Was there any discussion committee about those issues and how well it's doing now that it's come under the control of the State Parks Recreation? Are they making the payments on time? Are things rolling in the right direction?
Yes, there was a very good discussion on that, Senator, and there is great progress being made, and I think the committee felt in passing this out that things were on the right, going in the right direction, and being accomplished in a proper form.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good question, good answer. Thank you, sir. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 2273A, revising definitions used in Oregon billboard law. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have the pleasure of carrying what is likely to be the most compelling bill this morning. House Bill 2273 makes changes to the Oregon Motorist Information Act in response to an Oregon Supreme Court ruling that found parts of the current law unconstitutional. The bill is referred by the House Committee on Transportation. Changes to the law are required to ensure the state is not penalized for failing to comply with federal requirements. Failure to comply with the Federal Beautification Act can result in a loss of 10% of certain annual highway funds, estimated at $25 million to $30 million. The bill proposes to keep in place existing regulations for permitting outdoor advertising signs, but changes the way signs are classified to address the constitutional concerns of the court ruling. The bill also establishes a task force to discuss issues relating to relocation credits, emerging technologies, and penalties for violations. In addition, the bill provides for a contested case hearing process for instances where a permit is denied or not renewed. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact, noting that the Department of Transportation expects an increase in workload and expenses that may cost as much as $450,000. Because the department's budget is currently before the subcommittee, the fiscal issue will be resolved in the agency's budget bill. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2273A be reported out due pass.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In committee, this bill was discussed at length, and the committee chair was kind to allow discussions around the multiple companies that hold the sign permits that are discussed in this bill. The intent of the bill is to keep the Department of Transportation from losing their share of the national or the federal funding. And with that part, I agree. This is another piece of legislation that just doesn't go far enough in dealing with the permit holders of these signs. There are three or four companies that own 80 or 90% of the permits for these signs in Oregon. We heard testimony during committee where the permit holders described these permits as an asset. And upon further questioning on those, quote, assets, we ascertained that they literally pay a $5 fee to maintain the permit. They do not pay personal property tax on that asset. And you wonder to yourself, well, how much is that worth? And we had other testimony from other sign companies within that subcommittee discussion where maybe $100,000 had been offered to purchase the permit. So if you are the holder of these sign permits, you may hold millions of dollars worth of value in permits that these signs don't get traded. It limits the number of signs that can be placed within Oregon. And therefore, it increases the cost of the advertising to the business, and they pay no personal property tax on the value of that asset. It isn't dealt with in this bill. It should be. The committee would be looking into it down the road, but it's an issue that should have been taken care of within the bill. And with that, to make a point and to be clear, and thank you to my chair and the committee, I will be a no on this vote.
Look forward to your bill in the future, Representative. Thank you. Good comments. Further discussion? Seeing none, one objection, other objections?
Cool.
Representative Hannah only, thank you. Bill passes. Other business, Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources Subcommittee, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Subcommittee recommends approving the submission of two federal grant applications to the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the amount of $90,000 for an outreach program to farmers who are not currently covered by catastrophic risk protection crop insurance, and $75,000 for a farmer's market promotion program. The first grant the department is seeking is a competitive grant for $90,000 from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. With the grant, the department would provide information to producers that do not currently carry catastrophic crop insurance on a new insurance product called Adjusted Gross Revenue, or AGR. AGR is insurance based on the average adjusted gross income of a producer over the last 5 years and can be a cheaper alternative to traditional crop insurance. The department hopes this effort will increase the number of producers carrying crop insurance. The second ODA grant request is for $75,000 to connect schools to local agricultural products. The department will work with the Oregon Farmers Market Association to better connect Oregon farm direct sellers to school food purchasers if the grant is successful. Neither grant requires a match. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends approval of the request. These are, again, two good grant requests.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, Education Subcommittee, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Your Education Subcommittee recommends that the Joint Committee on Ways and Means approve the application for two federal grants totaling $10 million under the U.S. Department of Labor's Workforce Innovation in Regional Economic Development, or WIRED, initiative. Sorry about that. Didn't name that one. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development requests approval to submit two grant applications to the U.S. Department of Labor, Employment and Training Administration. If either application is approved, the department will request a federal funds expenditure limitation increase to allow expenditure of the grant funds. The WIRED initiative supports the development of integrated regional approaches to workforce and economic development and education. Each grant would total $5 million and be made available over a three-year period. The department would apply for $5 million grants on behalf of two of Oregon's local workforce regions. One grant would be for Workforce Systems, Inc., and would be applied toward providing workforce services in Multnomah, Clackamas, Marion, and Polk counties. The other
would be for the Oregon Consortium, Oregon Workforce Alliance, which would use the funds for services in Lynn, Benton, Lincoln, Lane, Douglas, Wasco, Sherman, Hood River, Wheeler, Gilliam, Crook, Deschutes, Jefferson, Klamath, and Lake counties. The federal grants require no state match, either now or in the future. The agency will not request additional position authority for its grant oversight activities. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Thank you, sir. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I'm going to
I'm going to
support this application because leaving free money on the table, assuming we're successful, strikes me as foolish. But I think this underscores a continuing problem about the ambiguity of workforce and how we apply workforce and who's responsible for it and who audits and monitors the outcomes. We have workforce requests throughout our budgets. Some go to the community colleges, some go to private not-for-profits, and I think it is impossible for us to know if we're getting bang for the buck with the proliferation of these workforce initiatives that don't seem to connect back to any measurables.
Thank you very much. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none? So ordered. Good work, committee. We're supposed to join, some of our members at 9 o'clock, and I think there's a walk out to the Walk of the Flags to have a moment to remember the awful events in Virginia this past week. So I appreciate everyone getting the work done in a timely manner. Is there a discussion point or something?
Very, very briefly, Mr. Co-Chair. There was a budget that was heard in the Human Services Subcommittee yesterday, the long-term care ombudsman budget, in which the majority of the members on the House side objected to the co-chair's recommendation, and I think that we were all left with a certain amount of dissatisfaction in the way that that was resolved. And I have spoken to you in the past about this, and I would very much welcome a discussion from the co-chairs to clarify what the latitude actually is in the subcommittees to change the recommendations to the co-chair's budget. And I just would, I think that that would help clarify a lot of confusion about how the process is supposed to work this time.
If we'll get you to vote yes once in a while on some of these general fund budgets, I'd be glad to do that. Actually, we're looking forward to doing that. We're going to be talking to the co-chairs or the subcommittee chairs within the next week to line out the work sessions for getting us out of here in the next 9 weeks and the expectations that we have, expectations they'll have of you to get to them, and opportunity to discuss this, or all these budgets, frankly, and then have some changes made if you need to, and vote them out, hopefully with our votes, if we meet your approval.
Mr. Chair, if I might also respond. I appreciate you bringing this to our attention. Please do understand that the latitude that's available is within the confines of a balanced budget. And so any additions have to be balanced by a subtraction somewhere else.
Thank you very much. On reflection of field hearings, I've heard back from some members of the disabled community who were very pleased to have the opportunity to come and be present. But I think a learning for us is that we need to be more sensitive and accommodating to the needs of the disabled community. There was a gentleman who was in a wheelchair and on a ventilator, signed up to speak, but had to leave before his name was called. Again, it's just a reminder to us that we need to look at the accommodations, people's inability to climb steps, and et cetera, and build that into our planning. Thank you.
Very good comment. We're learning as we do this. Thank you, members. Good discussion. Excellent quality discussion. I appreciate everyone's patience and coming in early. We're adjourned.